WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshall guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
It is worth noting that I have more than 800 podcast segments that are up on the website for you to be able to check out. It goes back, I'm going to say it's probably a couple of years. So if you've missed an episode, if you've missed a segment, feel free to go to 959WATD.com and click on Monday Night Talk. Now, I'm getting the high sign from Chris that joining us right now is none other than the state representative representing the folks down in Plymouth, Mr. Matt Muratori. How are you, sir?
Good evening, Kevin. How are you?
We're doing pretty good. How were your holidays, my friend?
Oh, you know, they're not over yet. We still have New Year's, so... but we had a great day on yesterday at Christmas. And actually, you know, with Christmas being on Sunday, you know, and Saturday being Christmas Eve, it actually turned out to be a two-day event this year. So it was kind of nice being with the family. I heard you talking about, you know, family issues sometimes. And that's true, but it's always nice getting together with family and friends and, you know, just kicking back a little bit. So we've had a great one. How about you?
I had a really good Christmas, but let's keep it real here. It was like going, oh, I look forward to family. Yeah. You look forward to family, but let's be honest. There is a family member or two who just, you know, you like saying hi to them, but you just keep it at that.
Yeah, and you have to tolerate them for these couple of days, exactly.
Yeah, well, tolerate, well, you know, you hear the same story six times, you know.
Yeah.
I love my dad, but there's many times that he'll tell me the same story at least four times within a 24-hour period. I love him. But he's that guy who'll tell me that, you remember? Yeah, Dad. Yeah, we talked about this during the football game a half hour ago.
Hey, I was a nursing home administrator for 25 years before I came state rep, so I heard many stories over and over and over again from patients or residents that I dealt with.
It happens. It's not a bad thing.
It's wonderful.
So we're glad to...
Before we start, I just want to express, you know, Chris and I want to express our condolences to Ed. We're so sorry to hear about his wife and... You know, to his family and to the whole WATD family, we express our deepest condolences for his loss.
That's very much. I'm sure that Ed is listening somewhere and definitely appreciates it. It's very sad to hear. But she was surrounded by her family, her loved ones.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
I think that's probably the most important thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But thank you so much for your for the kind words, and I'm sure we'll make sure we pass them along to the Perry family. Yeah. So here we are, coming to the end of 2017.
Hard to believe
you had quite the tight race for re-election.
Yeah.
But darn it, you're going back to the state house.
Going back to the state house. Yeah, and it's funny about that race too. You know, people said, "Oh, you know, we thought you'd win bigger than that." We always knew it was going to be a really tight race. You know, John Mahoney is a sitting selectman and has been for a number of years, longer than I was a selectman with him. And we just knew it was going to be tight, so we had to work just as hard. And we pulled it off.
And it goes to show how passionate the residents are in the community, how much they care, how engaged they are when it comes to the issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great community. You know, in this election, 80% of the people in Plymouth, you know, voted. It was just wonderful. And it was great to get out and knock doors and talk to the people and hear about what the issues really are.
Knowing that we've heard a lot of things lately in regards to the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station and that leaked memo, the concerns about how safe it is, yourself as an elected official, I'm sure you've been privy to the conversations, what should go forward, should we wait until 2019? How are you feeling at this moment?
Well, you know, it was concerning to have that so-called leaked memo come out, but it was more concerning, you know, when the selectmen and ourselves as a delegation, you know, requested the NRC to come forward and let's, you know, talk about this and, you know, what's really going on, the plan, talk about the leaked memo. And you know, the response, you know, was okay. It wasn't that great. They are, I understand, from Selectman Tavares, the chairman of the Board of Selectmen of Plymouth, that the NRC will be coming out to the Plymouth Board of Selectmen sometime in January to talk more about it. But, it, you know, it was just a little concerning to hear about, you know, some of the things that are going on inside the plant. Now, with that said, we know that there's some great employees in the plant, and we know that, they're doing the best they can with what they have to make sure the plant is safe. And you know, these are people that live in the community as well as we do. So they're going to make sure the plant is going to, you know, remain safe. I think some of the frustration we have is with the communication with the NRC and have for a number of years, even when I was a selectman and the chairman of the Board of Selectmen in Plymouth, that, you know, it was frustrating at times with the trying to get the communication with them.
When the news came out regarding the leaked memo, how often did you hear from your constituents? Are you still hearing from folks who are asking questions of you to see what you know about the situation or what's being done?
You know what, Kevin? You know, I talked to State House News the other day about this, and, you know, they asked pretty much the same thing, and we don't really hear too much from the residents. You know, this plant has been here over 40 years.
Yep.
You know, the shutdowns come and go at the plant. I think people just, you know, are used to that. And, you know, even if they saw, you know, the leaked memo in the newspaper or heard about it, you know what? Again, I think people, you know, for the most part feel, okay, well, it's safe and, you know, they'll work out whatever the issues really are. So we don't really get a lot of calls from our constituents about this. No, not at all.
Okay. Something just to, again, get a little bit of a gauge as to what the residents or what the folks in your district are, you know, reaching out to you mm-hmm. about. And if mm-hmm. you're not hearing a lot, then obviously they're satisfied with what's going on in the local level.
I would think, you know, obviously we hear from the, you know, from the activists a lot, you know, particularly Mary Lambert. Lambert, she actually keeps us informed of things that are happening and all that. But, I think it's real apathy with the folks in Plymouth and the surrounding communities when it comes to the power plant.
Let's take a look at 2017. We're just a couple of days short before you're back in office. I want to say, Wednesday, you're back in office, right?
We get sworn in at 11 o'clock on Wednesday, yeah.
Well, what's the first things you do to get re-energized and get locked back in?
Well, it's not so much getting re-energized because, you know, even during the race, you know, we're still going into Boston and prepping for the new session, anticipation of the new session, whether I was going to go in or John was going to go in. Yeah, we were working on a number of different bills, you know, prepping those and getting those ready, because you only have about 15 days after being sworn in to file all the bills for the next session. So we've been working on some of that. You know, we've been working on a lot of the Plymouth 400, as you know, that's, you know, the commemoration is coming up in 2020.
Yeah.
So we're working and we'll continue to work on that in this next session. But I think the biggest thing that we keep hearing about from the folks of Plymouth and the surrounding areas is opiate crisis. And, you know, even though there was some landmark legislation filed by the governor and passed and signed off by the governor earlier this year, you know, it's not getting any better. And you know, the governor had said that at the time, that it's not going to get better, but more needs to be done. So we do need to do more as a state and as a community, you know, to help resolve this opiate crisis once and for all.
Probably one of the connecting conversations, and it depends on who you ask, because I think everybody has a different opinion when you ask them about marijuana. We know now that recreational marijuana, it's legal. You can grow your own plants now. There will be work done to put together a commission that will, you know, allow folks to purchase licenses and be able to sell recreational marijuana and products that are made with it. But of course, there will have to be guidelines put in place as to where they can operate and how soon, whether it's going to be 2018 or beyond. But it's something that will happen. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, personally, I wasn't for it when it happened, but you know, it passed, and now we live with the reality that's going to happen. So on the local level, the delegation is going before the Board of Selectmen in Plymouth on January 3rd, and we're going to request that the board actually put a in the May election, put a ballot question on there to not go along with the marijuana law in the town of Plymouth, which really basically is about the pot stores.
Right.
So we're going to be asking that for them to do that. And really, the reason to do that is really to get the conversation going with the people of Plymouth and see what it means. You know, again, like I said, 80% of the population voted. 52% voted for marijuana. Okay. So people understand, okay, the marijuana is going to be now legal. But I don't think a good portion of those people really understood, well, what does that mean to the town of Plymouth? So we want to get that conversation going. On the state level, it was a ballot initiative. So it is kind of difficult to make some changes to a ballot initiative that the voters voted on.
Right.
But I do understand from the speaker that there will be some changes coming forth very shortly in January, February to look at the vote on. I hope one of them will be the taxes, because as we know, we've already heard from the treasurer that the taxes are just not going to be enough.
Sure.
For what that is. So I hope that's going to be one of them that we're going to be able to look at and, you know, and hopefully raise. But, you know, we're going to have a fight, you know, from the other side, you know, whatever changes we're going to do.
Well, in comparison to what Washington State did when in regards to taxing recreational marijuana in Colorado, it's definitely a lot lower than what those states are, you know, pulling in for revenue. Whether they're pulling
27% and 35%. I mean, and we're only at 10%.
Right. Which isn't much.
Not at all.
No.
Considering, you know, some of the things you're going to see that are going to have to be implemented.
When you look at recreational marijuana, and I think the thing I said earlier is it depends on who you ask. Some folks feel that marijuana is, you know, a gateway drug. What's your worry in regards to the use of marijuana in regards to the battle to try to help folks who are addicted to, the issues with pills and heroin and opioids?
Yeah, well, you know, that was always a concern, and I think the stat was 80% of the people who have taken opiates have done marijuana. Now, I'm not saying that marijuana led to that,
right,
but have at least done marijuana.
Right.
You know, and the other side of it too, and you know, we're realistic about this, is that, you know, marijuana is probably more preferable than taking an opiate for people.
Right.
If you had to compare the two, and in some cases, alcohol too, it's probably better than alcohol. But we, you know, I still felt that the timing of this was pretty poor to do this because of the opiate crisis we're in. You know, we need to put all our energy, all our resources into resolving this opiate crisis. And now some of those resources and time and money are going to be pulled, you know, towards this marijuana law as
right.
well. So that's what concerns me the most.
Right. And that's what that was part of my curiosity, my thoughts, you being an elected official, knowing that there's been an ongoing effort to try to do something with the opioid epidemic and try to find a way to find treatment, have enough beds, at least try to get out in front of this, because
correct.
You know, there have been various reports released that we've yet to see this thing peak. It's still,
yeah.
You know, the number of folks who are overdosing, we're still seeing it, those numbers climb.
Yeah. Kevin, I got a call yesterday morning on Christmas Eve morning from a constituent, you know, desperate need of, you know, helping to try to get a bed somewhere, you know, for their loved one.
Yep.
I mean, this is constant. And again, you know, these resources are going to start being pulled away, and the discussions are going to start being pulled away from the opiate is what my fear is, to deal with the marijuana. And we just have to keep on track with this opiate crisis and, you know, keep our eye on the ball.
Looking at other state issues, other issues here in the Commonwealth, we know that right around the corner, as soon as we say welcome 2017, we're talking about Governor Baker putting forth his budget, part of the budget process. Are you expecting any surprises, anything that you've already been kind of tipped off about in regards to what we might see for fiscal year 2018?
Nothing yet. We do have a monthly meeting with the governor, and we expect to have that meeting on January 3rd, next Tuesday. So hopefully we'll hear something more at that point. But we do know that the governor is still very much committed to the cities and towns with local aid. in education, and that will continue into this next budget. And he's also committed to making sure that it's a balanced budget, that we live within our means, so that we're not adding any more new taxes, and the revenue that comes in, can take care of all the needs of the Commonwealth. So I think those would be the highlights at this point, but nothing specific yet.
Any effects of, I know he had to make some cuts recently. Did your district suffer from any of those cuts, or is that something that we'll have to look in the new budget to see if there'll be any effects?
Yeah, I think every area got hit a little bit. The Plymouth 400, instead of getting 200,000, lost 100,000, so they'll still get 100,000. There were some other small grants here and there. The regional tourist councils, Destination Plymouth, lost some money as well. I met with Secretary Ash last week to try to talk about tourism and the plan moving forward for tourism. But it's difficult, from the governor's perspective that, the money, the revenue wasn't there. But I think the speaker has said already that he's going to be coming out probably in February with a supplemental budget to try to put most of those cuts back in. So we'll see where that goes.
As an elected official, do you set legislative goals for yourself? Again, start of the new year. I don't know if it's something that you yourself, as a person, would set. Is that what you do?
Well, this is a freshman year for me, so yep. It's really a learning year. The last couple of years, and kind of see how things work. But I was fortunate to follow Vinny DiMaceto and kind of see how he does things. But I think this time around it will be a little different. Of course, it'll be whatever the governor's gender is. But I'm branching out more to see what more of the needs of the community of Plymouth, that we can actually help with. Particularly in economic development. We were successful last year in the T-Wharf and Cordish Park. Cordish Park, they just got 204 apartments that are going to be, started to build next year. So I think branching out more into that area for the town of Plymouth and help position it better for the next decade.
I do want to pay you a bit of a compliment. A couple of weeks ago, I was watching PAC TV. I saw yourself with other elected officials, Tom Coulter. I saw Vinny there, Vinny DiMaceto, part of the celebration for PCN's 200th episode. And I wanted to say, give me your thoughts on a community television station like that and all that it does, and being a part of that celebration that night.
What an honor to be at that. And thank you for the compliment. It was great to be there. And it was the 20th anniversary of PAC TV as well. And,
right.
Nancy Richards was there, who actually started it, and we were able to give citations out. But to be a part of what they've done and where they're going, I was fortunate enough just recently to be elected to their board of directors this past summer.
Wow.
So I can see from the inside how things are going, too. And there's some great things coming from PAC TV. But to have a community access channel that provides the services they do, I say are probably second to none, and more to come. One of the things I talked about at that is, they don't know how to say no at PAC TV. We 5 years ago when Shishigahara, Japan, they had the tsunami there, and within 10 days we had a telethon on right. PAC TV and raised $100,000. I mean, you just don't hear those type of things happening at community access stations, but this one does it all.
Well, when you get a toolbox full of tools, you do your best to use them when you need to.
You got that, my friend. You got that right.
Well, we're coming up to the end of our conversation here. Next Saturday night, we'll be counting down. Now, are you the type of guy who does a New Year's resolution where I won't do this or I'll try to do more of that? Do you have one?
I do the same one every year, and it's to lose weight. But this year, I am going to stick to it, no matter what. I just came from a physical, from my doctor. Everything's great, but I've got to lose some weight, and finally, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I'm on board with you. Myself, I'm going to lose a couple of LBs. I try. The problem is that once I step on the elevator, I go down, and then ding, 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 the doors close, I go back up.
Yeah.
it's the weakness, I love good food.
Yeah, me too. I'm Italian, so that's why.
If folks want to reach out to you, if you got a constituent who has issues or wants to just touch base with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, just call our office at 617-722-2014. That's 2014. Yeah, just call us out. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter or You know, there's so many different ways that people find me. And, you know, every day people are calling and we're helping in any way we possibly can.
Well, Representative,
that's the best part about the job.
We love having you on here on a regular basis. You've been a great addition since being elected to be on Monday Night Talk and talk about what's going on down in your district. And we'll look forward to continuing that trend in 2017.
Absolutely. Anytime, Kevin. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year to you and your fans and all your people listening out there and your family.
You got it. There he is. State Representative Matt Muratori, our guest here on Monday Night Talk. We are going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Kingston Collection. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And again, we thank State Representative Matt Muratori for being our guest during this first hour of the program. And we turn our attention now to malls. Here we are coming off a holiday where, you know, some folks are doing more and more shopping online. But yet, you know, just down the street, there is those old friends, the mall. It has a collection of stores and venues. But it isn't easy these days when you've got, when your competition is a mouse click away from being able to purchase things. So you're going to find different ways to lure prospective customers to the brick and mortar. And we have Wynn Schoenick. He is the general manager, I believe, is for the Kingston Collection. Is that correct, Wynn?
That is correct. Absolutely.
How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you tonight? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well. Very interesting article in the Wall Street Journal in regards to the malls and finding ways to be able to bring, to get folks not just to come to the malls to do all of their shopping, whether it's for the holidays or just for their regular needs, but finding more creative ways and to stay ahead of the curve when you're up against something like folks who could just shop on the internet and have it delivered to your doorstep. Talk to me about what the Kingston Collection is trying to do these days to try to lure and maintain folks to stop on by every so often, if not more.
Yeah, absolutely. And you referenced the Wall Street Journal article. So they did a great piece on our company and the way we've tried to go about mixing our shopping centers with engaging destinations. And I think our CEO Steve Conkle said it best. When customer these days, I mean they're going to the shopping center, and as much as they're buying products, they're looking to buy experiences too. So we're trying to cater to today's customer by providing, engaging experiences and destinations that, might offer, various products, but also, creative ways for them to come in and learn and be entertained.
Now, from what I understand, there's an educational component to this that you're trying to instill to the folks who are coming to the collection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it really touches on all ages. I mean, obviously, we have a children's component with destinations like Billy Bee's, which is really a venue that's geared towards young children and families. But we also have the Bar Rustic and Studio Kitchen component, which for those people that are not familiar, it's a brand new restaurant that just opened up. In addition to having a full service bar as well as a dining room, they have what's called the Studio Kitchen, which is actually a live cooking show. Customers can come in, they can sit down at the bar or sit down at the dining room, but then they can also buy tickets to go to the live Studio Kitchen show where they have a host who actually cooks the food right in front of you, teaches you how to cook it, and as you go through the process, you get to enjoy the food that's being cooked as well. So that's, it's educational for adults as well. They can go and, learn some how to cook certain meals that are catered to, obviously, the seasons of the year.
Is this a new concept to our region, or is this something that is slowly being integrated in malls in and around the Commonwealth?
I think for the Studio Kitchen specifically, it's been in Boston before. So Jim Caffarelli actually relocated his Boston location to Kingston Collection. So this is now the only studio kitchen in the Commonwealth. And it is, you know, it is a very unique destination that it doesn't really exist anywhere else right now. You know, I'm not sure if you'll see it pop up anywhere else in the future. I'm not sure what the plans for Jim Caffarelli's teams are, but we're obviously, you know, thrilled to have the only existing studio kitchen and bar rustic restaurant on site at Kingston Collection.
Now, what are the particular types of foods that are cooked up? Do you have, is there a carousel of, whether it's Italian or French or European, you might have an Asian tip to it. I mean, does it run the gamut?
Yeah, you know, I don't know yet. I think right now they have been running a beef tenderloin. So I was actually lucky enough to be at the first show with my wife, and the host, Liz Bramwell, who does a fantastic job, basically takes you through the whole process of cooking a beef tenderloin. And my understanding is that will change based on the seasons. It'll change month to month.
Ooh.
So it could be, you know, it's beef tenderloin today. Who knows what it'll be tomorrow? But if, you know, people can obviously visit the Kingston Collection website or the Bar Rustic Studio Kitchen website, keep up on the schedule as they continue to update the different offerings, different shows.
What was your take? I'm sure being the person who oversees the operations at the Kingston Collection, you're more than just trying to learn, but you're also kind of observing as to how the folks are taking in the studio kitchen.
It's fantastic. It's a wonderful experience. I would encourage anybody to do it. It's very engaging. Liz Bramwell, the host, she's actually won an Emmy recently in the local Emmy Awards. She's a fantastic host. Very engaging, very fun. She encourages everybody in the audience to be engaged in the show. And you know, at the end of the day, it's great food, and it's a lot of fun.
Talk to me a little bit about the customer trends when it comes to the shopping center industry. What do you feel as though are some of the things that you guys are trying to instill into the Kingston Collection to be able to get more foot traffic and to be able to service a broader number of customers?
Well, I think what we're trying to do is, again, we're trying to offer something that's unlike anything else on the South Shore. And I think what our vision was to bring, you know, first-class retail, entertainment, and dining to the South Shore, unlike anything else you would find really outside the city of Boston. And along with that, you know, we found that what we're trying to bring to this destination, it's engaging. It's encouraging our customers to not only come visit the center, but stay for a longer period of time. And I think it's really been, obviously, very successful for us so far.
Okay. How about as far as partnerships? You know, again, I know that the Kingston Collection is on the rebuild, and you guys have done a fine job with some of the new things that you have put in, and including the one concept that we're talking about right now, the studio kitchen. But who are some of the national and regional retailers and outlets that you're working with that you're hoping that will become a part of the collection?
I can't really give any names quite yet. Obviously, we're always working in to bring in the best in terms of national retail. But, you know, one thing that's been very important for us at this property as well is bringing in great regional names. I think with Kingston Collection specifically, we've brought in a lot of great regional entertainment and dining and retail options. Newbury Comics, the Waxy's Modern Irish Bar and Kitchen, which just opened up earlier this year, is a
fantastic
new restaurant
place
for us. Yeah,
yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
We have Sky Zone Trampoline Park, which is a great venue for families, which is actually owned by a local operator, a local franchisee. Fit Factory, which is a brand new fitness facility owned by a couple of guys out of the South Shore area as well. They actually have another location up in Braintree. Coco Fit Club is owned by a local franchisee. So, you know, we've really trying to go out and pair a lot of the great national retailers like we have, such as Clark's Outlet, Victoria's Secret, New York & Company. Bring all those traditional great national retailers that people come to and expect at a good shopping center, and pair those with strong regional operators that bring a lot of passion to what they do. And I think our customers can see that when they come visit the center.
What are we looking at for 2017? What are the surprises, or what are some of the things that are in the works that you hope to be able to accomplish and add to what you already have in place at the Kingston Collection?
Yeah, no surprises just yet. Can't give it anything away right now. But
sure.
you know, we're going to continue to add on a, you know, what's been a very successful 2016 for us. And I think, you know, anybody that continues to visit Kingston Collection or track our progress, you're going to see us continue to make a lot of new announcements, you know, both in the dining, entertainment, and retail realm. So I think you'll continue to see us making great progress and bringing, you know, more venues that our customers are looking for.
I guess I would ask you, I mean, how often do you find yourself out and about at other regional malls just to kind of see what they're doing and compare, you know, say, okay, this is what they're doing, you know, and this is what how long they've been doing it, and we want to do something different. How often do you find yourself looking at the competition?
Very often, you know, regularly. And it's important to our industry, and I think the Boston market, the South Shore market, you know, there's a lot of unique there's a lot of unique venues out there. So we always try to, you know, keep an eye on things to see, you know, obviously from a competition standpoint, but also, you know, what can we do differently? And I think that was a big reason that we put together the vision that we have at Kingston Collection, because we were out in the market, we were going around, we were seeing what the voids were. And, you know, we really felt that, you know, after doing our research, we felt that, you know, there's no destination for entertainment and dining specifically outside of Boston.
And a lot, that's why we have the studio kitchen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, how, if somebody wants to participate in something like the studio kitchen, is it as easy as walking in and saying, I'd like a ticket? Or is this something that they have to do in advance? What's some of the dynamics of it that you could share?
Well, I would recommend you do it in advance. I can tell you they've been selling out shows very quickly.
Okay.
And I believe the most recent update was they'd actually sold out through February. It's as easy. They can, if you want to come visit the restaurant and get something to eat or grab a drink, you can come in and do it that way. You can actually do it online. So if you were to look up the Studio Kitchen online, you can go to their website, and I believe it's run through Yelp, and you can actually make a reservation either for just a dinner reservation, or you can go on and buy a ticket for the Studio Kitchen show as well.
Again, we're speaking with Win Shonick. He is the general manager of the Kingston Collection. We've been chatting with him about some of the things that they're working on and that they're doing and that they've added to the collection since changing names and changing things around. Anything I haven't asked you in regards to the things that are going on down at the collection that you feel is important to the folks who are listening right now?
Well, you know, I think the only thing that I would say is if you're not familiar with the property or if you haven't been to Kingston Collection in some time, I would, you know, highly encourage you to come down. It's a very unique destination that you would you won't find anywhere else, specifically in the South Shore. So I encourage everybody and anybody, all ages, to come visit because we have something for everybody.
Now, I have to get personal just for a minute, Wynn, and that is, now, are you the type of guy that makes a New Year's resolution?
I try to. I try my best.
What's one of the popular ones that you, are you like myself, where you promise to lose a couple of pounds and can't do it, or is it something else?
We're trying to, yes, I think that's usually an every year resolution for me, is to eat as healthy as I can. Obviously, with things like, you know, Studio Kitchen, Bar Rustic and Waxy's offering some nice, a little more organic food options. It makes it a little easier for me while I'm eating lunch at the mall. But, yeah, that's what my wife and I have been trying to do, stay a little more active.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. Hopefully you can make it beyond the first, a week or two of the new year with your resolution. And we'll look forward to maybe having you on in 2017 to chat with us about some of the newer endeavors, the newer things that you're looking to add to the mall to attract folks and make a better time when they're down at the mall, not just a matter of shopping, but, you know, educating them and getting them to get an idea of what's going on, what you guys are trying to do to bring entertainment to the Kingston area.
Absolutely, yeah. At any time, I'd love to join you again and obviously share any information I can with you about what we're doing at the property.
All right. Thank you very much. There he is, Win Shonick, with the Kingston Collection. Chris, your thoughts real quick before we transition to the top of the hour in hour number two of Monday Night Talk. What's your thoughts of something like a studio kitchen where you can go in and almost like the Chew? What's the show there that they have on during the weekday?
That's definitely the chew.
The chew.
Yeah, my mother watches it all the time.
Oh my God, he just made a meatball. I mean, what do you think of something like that? Is that something that would lure you to the mall other than to go down and buy a gift or pick up, you know, your weekly collection of toothpaste and deodorant and whatever?
You know, I actually applaud him because the idea of look at the mall not as just a retail experience, but looking at it as a entertainment experience, that's something unique for the South Shore. Like, I live in Braintree. I have the South Shore Mall right there. I mean, excuse me, South Shore Plaza. And I never think of the South Shore Plaza as entertainment sort of thing. I wouldn't go to South Shore Plaza for entertainment. I think it's going to draw people in. I think it's going to be a really good thing for Kingston.
See, the one thing that I think of is when you say, I do think of entertainment, but I usually think of it as a side component. So if I went down to the Kingston Collection, I would go to Regal to go to the movie theater. Or if I went to Newbury Comics, maybe I wanted to grab the latest DVD that was just released, but that would be kind of a more of a consumer. I'm going to buy the entertainment, then go home and, you know, watch it.
Yeah, I see malls as a sort of get in, get out thing for me personally. So this might actually make me want to hang around. So I applaud him for taking this initiative.
Well, I think, and the other thing, as I started the conversation with Wynn about, was the idea that the competition is fierce, especially where you could do your shopping online. It's inexpensive. You don't have to worry about dealing with, you know, maybe an associate who is not fast, or, you know, if you're not somebody who deals well with people.
Exactly.
Maybe you're not somebody who is, you know, a people person.
See, I'll be honest, I'm guilty of that. I don't like crowds of people, so I did most of my shopping on Amazon. The only reason I went to the plaza was because it was too close to Christmas and it wouldn't have gone there in time.
Mm.
So, yeah, no, I could definitely see this being a good thing.
See, I enjoy people to a point, but I'm also a people watcher. I'm usually one of those who's easily amused watching a situation unfold. Although if I could help out in some way, I will. But just kind of watching a situation or watching how people just sometimes can be people.
Exactly.
You know, when they're not in their own environment and or culturally don't understand some of the, you know, ways to say please and thank you or expect something now. But other than that, you know, going in and having an experience, you know, going to somewhere like the Studio Kitchen where you can watch them whip up a steak, show you some of the ways, the tendencies to be able to do that, and without burning it or without setting off the, you know, the smoke alarms in your house or drawing of the fire department down because you really smoked out the house.
Now I'm looking at the website right now, and the beef thing that he was talking about is beef Wellington crafted with a tender fillet of beef wrapped in prosciutto and a wild mushroom duxelle. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but either way, that sounds amazing. That sounds like something I would go to.
It sounds like something I would go to, but I would hope that they would change it and that there would be different types of food that they would have. But maybe you and I should have to take a run down there one of these times and check it out.
You know, purely for investigative journalism.
Just for investigative. Yeah, maybe it could be like a little feature piece we do on during one of our newscasts.
That sounds like a great idea.
Awesome. All right. Well, we want to thank again Wynn Schoenick from the Kingston Collection for joining us, and thanking Chris for weighing in and giving a little bit of sidebar on that new addition down there at the Kingston Collection. Folks are into cooking shows and culinary classes. This is the way to go. Just stop on down there. Tell them that you heard it here on Monday Night Talk. We're going to step aside, but when we come back, we're going to speak with Mr. Dave Skill. Mr. Dave Skill, who is taking off the news hat. Going to be putting on another hat. Stay tuned for the details coming up right after the top of the hour here at 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. This, of course, the second hour of the program. And we have a very special guest for this segment, this gentleman, a colleague of mine here at the radio station, who has been a very important part of WATD for some 30 years, very instrumental in a lot of the stuff that's done in the WATD newsroom, as he has done somewhere around 60,000 newscasts. Some of them, of course, in the morning, but there have been times he's done afternoon shifts, he's done weekends. That all comes to an end in just a couple of days, as he'll transition out of the newsroom to more of a part-time role at WATD, whether it's fill-ins in the newsroom, maybe a couple of air shifts, whether it's during the weekday or on the weekends. Who am I talking about? None other than Dave Skill himself. He's going to be here for this segment as well. We have some sound cuts from some folks here at the station and on the microphones chiming in, kind of being my co-hosts. We have Rob Hackler of the South Shore's Morning News, who has worked extensively with Dave, as well as Ryan is here joining us, Ryan Stanton, and they will be here to chat with us about Dave and working with this fantastic guy. We'll start with you, Rob. Welcome back to the program, and thank you for joining me to share some thoughts and some memories about our good friend, our colleague here, Dave Skill.
Thank you. Great to be here. And absolutely. Of course, I want to honor Dave, and it's good to be on your show, Kevin.
Well, not as good as being on your show, Rob, South Shore's Morning News with Rob and Lisa. And Ryan, of course, Ryan is another one who is leaving, but he'll also be here as well. But I think Ryan, one of the younger folks who works here, he could be a part of the segment as well. And we'll have a little sprinkling of some of the folks that you have worked with, Dave, over the past 30 years. Welcome officially to Monday Night Talk. This is your very, hopefully it's not your last stint, but
first and last.
Yeah, your first stint. And I want to take a couple of moments just to give you time to discuss your career. I mean, here at 959 WATD.
Well, I'm not used to doing things in the evening. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's kind of dark.
Mornings. It is.
It's the opposite dark that you're used to.
It is indeed. It's been a long 30 years and a fun 30 years. There's a great line in the movie Good Morning Vietnam. It's only radio, and it is only radio, but it's been fun for 30 years, and I want to thank specifically Ed Perry. Ed Perry was the one who got this all started. Basically, what happened was back in 1984, I started volunteering for the Talking Information Center in Marshfield, and they were based at Library Plaza in downtown Marshfield. And then Ed built the WATD building here on Enterprise Drive. And while he was getting WATD ready to go, TIC, the Talking Information Center, was up and running, and I was working there just weekends because I had a regular job during the week. And Ed walked in one day and said, "You know, you sound pretty good. Have you ever thought of being on the real radio?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be great." And I told him I had done college radio, and I worked at a radio station in Worcester while I was in college. And he said, "What about weekends?" And I said, "That'd be great." So I ended up doing some newscasts on the weekends, some DJing on the weekends. And then my job in computers where I was working went away. I knew it was going away because I was told that they were making some changes, but my job was perfectly safe. And that's when I knew the end was near. And in fact, in the fall of 1989, I came on board with WATD as the morning news guy. And I was quite honored to do that because most of the time when you start a radio station, you start doing overnights or weekends or something like that. And I did do some weekends. But to be the morning news guy right off the bat was interesting and quite a challenge. And it's been very interesting over the years. And one of the things that Ed said to me when he hired me, he says, "Well, here's the deal." That's when you know you're in trouble. Mm. "Here's the deal. You do news for 25 hours a week and you sell advertising for the rest of the time." So what I would do is I would come in my casual clothes and I would do the morning news. And at 9:30, I'd run in the bathroom and put a suit on and go out and try to sell ads.
Wow.
Wow, so you were like the WATD Superman. You would be Clark Kent in the morning.
That's right, and then I put my Superman or my Superman suit on, and I would go
super
out and
salesperson suit on.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a super salesperson. I did okay, but it wasn't my favorite. I like it's interesting. I like the part of sales where you service clients, but the going out and banging on doors saying, do you want to buy an ad? I'm not very good at that. So the clients that I've had over the years, and I've had several clients really for more than 20 years, the South Shore Music Circus, Family Pet and Garden Center, as Rob would say.
Up on the hill.
On Route 53 on the Hanover-Pembroke Town Line. I mean, they've been longtime sponsors, and I love working with these folks. And it's just been fun. But the idea of selling was not to my liking necessarily, but I did it, and it worked out okay. And then over time, I kind of got out of sales, and I spent more time doing the news and also having an opportunity to do feature series. And over the years, I've done feature series on all the Boston Harbor Islands, lighthouses, Quincy Quarry.
Irish moss.
Shovels.
The Shovel Museum at Stonehill College. We did a series with John Buckley from the Plymouth County Registry of Deeds, remarkable residents of Plymouth County's past. And
Simpson Spring.
We did Simpson Spring. In fact, I was talking to John earlier this week, or late last week, I should say, and we're going to be doing more features with John, remarkable residents of Plymouth County's past, and that kind of thing, and colonial history in preparation for 2020. But I also had a chance to do some DJ work, occasionally filling in during the midday show, and I'm a big oldies fan, and so Ed has allowed me over the years to do my favorite, doing oldies shows, whether it's the Beatles or Motown or the 60s girl groups, whatever it happens to be. So usually once a month, I kick Ron Dwyer out, and I take over his shift and do a Saturday show, or on the holidays, like Memorial Day, Labor Day, Columbus Day, when the DJ wants the day off, I say, I'm here. And so I'll do a specialty show, and that's been a lot of fun.
Talk to me about working with Christine James.
I've been working with Christine now, I think, since about 1990. And it's interesting, we work together, but we don't work really together. We're like two ships passing in the night, because if I do the morning, she does the afternoon. And for a while, she was doing some mornings, and I would do the afternoon. So we don't really spend a lot of time together. The time that we spend together usually is, you know, what have you got for me for the afternoon? What are we doing for tomorrow? And Christine and I have sort of set up a plan where you don't just live day to day. You plan out. Like on Monday, I'm planning for the rest of the week. And Christine and I have always worked together, and we share the responsibilities. I mean, she's the boss. She's managing editor. But titles don't really mean an awful lot around here, to be honest.
No, it's just another hat to wear.
Yeah.
Basically.
And so we've been working together. And traditionally, I do mornings. She does afternoons, and she likes that. And one of the things, we always try to help each other and be supportive. And over the years, we've had a lot of young people who have worked with us.
Thank you.
And they come and go. People like you.
Yep.
They come and go. Some stay a while. Some stay not all that long. But Christy and I have always kind of been the two anchors, if you will. Not meaning news anchors, but anchors of the news department. Right. And a lot of people, young people, what happens is they either are really good and they get a job at some big station. Like we had a young guy from Scituate, Aaron Katursky, works at ABC. Mm-hmm. We had Laurie Kirby, who was the news director for a while. She works at WBZ.
Of course.
Yes.
Steve Burns, a young guy right out of Emerson, and he wasn't able to live with us a year. And he ended up down at WMAL in Baltimore as a news anchor and news reporter. So, but then you also have people who say, you know what, I thought this was going to be fun, but I don't think I like it. And they would get out of the business.
They
might join another company. Mm-hmm. We had a young woman who left us and became like a paralegal at a law firm. But anyway, over the years, we've had a lot of people come and go and come and go. But Christine and I have always been here to kind of hold things together.
Well, I thought I would take an opportunity to, that's why we have Rob here, because Rob's gonna have a moment to kind of talk a little bit about work with you guys, maybe share some stories. Now, it'll just be small, because I know later this week you guys are going to do a little bit more of a conversation before Dave has his big send-off to the oldies.
Yes, yeah, so it's Friday morning.
I know you're working on that right now.
Yeah, we're working on
Dave Skill Roast.
A nice month. No, roast. It's going to look back.
Dave Skill, this is your life.
Really, the fun moments of 30 years, and unfortunately, we don't have most of those years. Tried to acquire as much audio as we could back to kind of get a sample of Dave working with the different hosts over the years before I arrived.
No kidding. Well, what I'd like to do is we're talking about Christine, and if we could, I think what we want to do is we want to play Christine. Actually, I asked her if she would give us a little something to share about you, Dave, if you will, sir.
Well, hi there, Dave. It's Christine James. How are you? Dave and I have worked together for over 25 years. Actually, I think it's about 26 years. And Dave knows what I'm going to say because he amazes me. A, the man never sleeps. And B, the man never naps. In all the years we've worked together, too, he's taken 2 sick days in all these years. One of them, I don't remember. He insists that he took it, but I think he may be making that up. Anyway, Dave is not really retiring. He's semi-retiring, which means he'll come in here and he'll be doing some fill-ins for us, which we like. He'll get to sleep in, so I know he actually does sleep, and he'll actually get to do a lot with music because I know music is Dave's first love. And you know how I know that? Because when he doesn't think I'm watching and he's doing his oldies special shows, he's in there lip-syncing to the music. And sometimes when he really thinks I'm even out of the building, I even catch Dave dancing a little bit. So, Dave, sing, dance, lip-sync to your heart's delight, even though you're not really retiring, you're semi-retiring, and we will see you around here now and then. Enjoy late mornings and a little bit more time off. You've deserved them. Christine James, WATD News.
The managing news editor of WATD,
that's
Christine
right.
James, and that was, thank you, Christine, for giving me that little sound bite. Now, I had a chance. Now, you said you did sales, right?
I do some sales.
All right, so what was it, did you ever have to sit in on? I heard a lot about those sales meetings. Have you ever had to sit in on those?
Yes. For a while, Christine and I used to have to go to the sales meetings because Christine does a few things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that it was torture. It was absolute torture. I just found that not a lot got accomplished, and we had some wild fights. It was just not a pleasant experience. In fact, after a sales meeting, I was ready to say, you know what, I think I'd rather be out selling than go to the sales meeting. But I'm not a big meetings person. The place that I worked before, a computer company, we didn't have meetings. Your boss gave you something to do, and if you had a problem, you went to him. And when you were done with the project, you gave it to him. But we didn't have a lot of these meetings, which I find to be time wasters, to be honest.
Well, I thought I would take time again to go around and talk with a couple of different people who've been here for a while. And so what I thought I would do is I would tap a fellow salesperson, also a gentleman from time to time who grabs the megaphone and does the good, the bad, and the really, really stupid. Mr. Bob Parkus weighed in when I told him that we were doing a little something to chat with you.
What can I say about Dave? Well, he always showed up, I can say that. He was never late for lunch, and boy, could that guy pack it away. The newsroom was always chock full of empty Chinese takeout, crusty pizza boxes, and not a shred of incriminating evidence. I gotta say, Dave never appeared inebriated on air. I don't know how he did it, frankly, and now I'll never know, because he's gone, and he's taking his secrets with him.
The always creative Bob Parkus.
Now, it's interesting. Now, for people who know Bob Parkus and have seen Bob Parkus, Bob kind of looks like Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Well, Bob and I actually graduated from the same high school.
Archbishop Williams,
Bob, I think, was 3 or 4 years ahead of me. So I was at Archie's one day because my wife was teaching there, and I got a hold of the yearbook from Bob's graduating year from high school, and he was this clean cut and short hair, no beard. Something happened over the years.
Really?
Something happened over the years. And it couldn't have been at Stonehill College where he went. It must have been after that.
Hmm.
But, yeah, and I see Bob, and, yeah, it's interesting. Bob shows up about 7 o'clock in the morning, and he's here until about 10 and then disappears.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
With his tomato juice.
And sometimes he goes on a bicycle, and sometimes he goes in his van, but he goes. Which reminds me, I do want to say one thing. Bob said, you know, I was never late for lunch. I was late for work once, back in the 1990s. I overslept.
No.
Luckily, okay. At the time, the news director was Bob Stone, a graduate of Emerson, and Bob lived at Fox Run, which is now, I think it has a different name. And I called him and I said, Bob, you got to help me. So he ran over and covered for me. But that's the only time I was ever late.
30 years.
In 30 years.
And it's true about the sick days, right? I mean, I never remember
never
a time when you've...
I've never had a sick day since I've worked with you.
That's amazing. I think that's great. And that certainly says a lot about, you know, showing up and doing the job and dependable and being there.
And setting the alarm for 3 or 3:15. And, of course, during stormy weather,
you
would set the alarm for maybe 2:30, 2:45, because you just never knew how the roads were going to be. I mean, you're not worried about traffic in the middle of the night, but you're worried about the roads. And that's actually the reason that I'm stepping down. It's not that I don't love what I do. Mm-hmm. I do. But, and if I lived 10 minutes away, I wouldn't retire. But I'm just finding as I'm getting older that it just bothers me, and I get sort of tense about,
sure. Hey,
if I see the forecast and for 4 days out it says snow's coming, I get nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, because you've lived it. You've been out. You've seen what it's like to try to drive in here. You've seen people spinning out, and you know what it's like to try to get
you've
in through the parking
on it,
lot
right.
to yes. actually get in the building and how dangerous it is.
It can be, yes. In fact, I have seen spinouts. And so the answer was, well, then don't drive in it. So the answer was to sleep here.
Oh, yes. And how enjoyable was that?
Oh, that was goodness. Not. So anyway, when Bob Stone was news director, Bob lived at Fox Run. So if it was going to snow, I would stay at his place and just trudge through the snow down Enterprise Drive to get in the building. But then he left us, and I was out of luck. So my wife said to me, I'm going to get you a cot. And so we ordered a cot from L.L. Bean.
Wait, is that leaving with you? I was going to start using that.
Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do with that. I was the Dave Skill Memorial
cot.
Anyway, what I would do is if there was snow coming, let's say there was a snowstorm coming at 4 o'clock Monday morning or 3 o'clock. Sunday night, I would drive down here before the snow with some food, and I would sleep, you know, or attempt to sleep in my L.L. Bean cot with a blanket and sheets, but you never sleep well.
No.
And it's not so bad if you do it like once a year, but sometimes, you know, 2 years ago, the winter we had with all that snow, I was here for like 3 or 4 nights.
Yeah.
Not in a row. I think it was 2 nights in a row and a night and a night.
But in 30 years, that had been that gets old.
It gets old real quick. It gets old real quick. I figure on average, I've probably had to sleep over, on average, a couple of times a year, which is a couple of times too many.
Yeah, you've done it.
I've done it too. I actually slipped downstairs on an air mattress, and I had one night a couple of mice ran by me. I'm like, whoa, what is this? It's interesting. Even the mice get cold.
Yeah. I've had to do it once.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, no.
I think you tried to sleep in your chair, didn't you?
I tried, yeah. I should have gone with a cot.
Well, use Dave's cot. No,
you know Dave was used to it. You know what's interesting over the years? Whenever it snowed, it was always one of my mornings to work. I've noticed that. It always seemed to be my morning. It never snowed when Christine was doing a morning. I can't figure that out.
I know. Now you're right about that. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Dave Skill.
And just to be on the safe side, the cot is not leaving this building until December 30th. I'm not taking any chances.
No. All right, so later this week, it'll be gone. If you will, we got one more person, Jackie McGoodwin.
Oh, wow.
Somebody else who's been here for many, many moon.
A little longer than I have.
Hi, I'm Jackie McGoodwin, and I've worked with Dave Skill for over 30 years, and it has been a pleasure. Dave, you have been great. We have enjoyed many laughs together. I always enjoyed watching you leave with your mattress rolled up under your arm after 2 long days of giving storm coverage to everyone on the South Shore. Our kids have grown through high school, college, adulthood, and we've always had some wonderful stories to share. I will miss you, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck for you and Carol.
Oh, wow.
That again, Jackie McGoodwin with a little sign-off for you.
That's very nice. Thank you, Jackie.
I want to get to you two guys. Now, how long have you, Rob, been working with Dave Skill?
Well, I came on full-time in November of 2000 around the presidential election, and I worked at that time with Aaron Katursky in the morning briefly, and then he was kind of at the end of his career here. Now, Dave had done the mornings primarily, pretty much he'd been the major morning guy pretty much for the last 30 years, right, Dave?
Right. I was doing 5 days a week for a number of years, and then they made some changes, and they took me off mornings, and then I was doing middays and some afternoons. And then what happened was, with Aaron and you, I was basically relegated to doing middays. I was doing a lot of court coverage and reporting from on scene at fires and accidents and things. But then Aaron Katursky came up to me one day and he said, Dave, I hope you didn't throw away your alarm clock. And I said, what do you mean? He says, I'm leaving. And so I think Aaron only did this show for about 4 months.
Yeah, it was not that long. I mean, he had been here a little bit before I had gotten here. But, we changed over the show and implemented the new format at that time. And then he moved on and Dave got a little chance to see what it was like to sleep in a little bit. But then took on the 5 days again, which was great. And you said, yeah, you'd be happy to jump in. And so you've been, even though I've worked with you, Kevin, and Aaron, and Steve, and Christine, and Dodd Roll, and other people that have done the morning news anchor, primarily it's been been Dave Skill, right, who's had the majority of those days, whether it be five and then four, and then in the last few years it's been about three.
Yes, we've kind of cut it back. Christine sometimes would do one or two, Kevin would do one or two, and I found that working three mornings was nice because it gave me a chance to be on the radio. It also gave me a chance to, you know, spend time at home and sleep a little bit.
So, yeah, I'm about 2045. I'm hoping to cut down to 3 days a week, too.
Are you really?
Yeah. Probably won't happen. But, yeah, but that was, it's been great to work with Dave Skill. And, you know, obviously going through the storms, I think about a lot of our storm coverage that we've done over the years where we've kind of just hunkered down. And Dave, you know, we did the school cancellations when that was a lot more, you know, of, when radio was the only way to get that a lot, when we started out working really before the internet took over, and we would be in there all morning long. And of course, you know, one of the big days, although it's such a, you know, to think about, was really 9/11 was the day that, and I think that was the time when, I'm not sure if was Aaron still here, but he went away or whatever, but I think you were like, well, the only one in the newsroom.
I was.
And had to end up staying the whole day.
Yes. I had come in for the morning, and about a little before 9, we had the television on, and we saw a report of a plane going into one of the Twin Towers, and the assumption was, oh, it's a Piper Cub or something, not a big deal. Well, we discovered it was a huge deal. Mm. And it was one thing after the other with the planes, and then it was one of those days where you just didn't know when it was going to end.
Yeah.
And so basically, Rob came in and helped me. But yeah, I mean, I was on the air basically from 5 in the morning until about 7:30 that night. And Ed Perry brought in all kinds of people. He brought in an airline pilot. He brought in a psychologist. He brought in a whole bunch of people to kind of comment on this. But again, we were flying by the seat of our pants. We had no idea how this was going to end.
Yeah.
And again, we're speaking with the great Dave Skill, master of the news department, and also a man who loves his music. I know when I'm on with Rob from time to time, and there's somebody from a 60s girl group or a British band.
We think of you, Dave.
We think of you, and like, what would Dave say? What would Dave say?
Right. When we do celebrity birthdays, I'm always happy when we have people from the world of music, whether it be, you know, it might be Mick Jagger or it might be Paul McCartney, something like that.
Give us a good Dave Clark 5 story. Tell me about the drums out front.
Oh, yes. Now, Dave Clark 5. Dave Clark was the drummer, and most bands have a drum kit in back. Well, yep. Dave Clark apparently had an ego thing, and he put his drum kit right smack in front.
Well, it's not the band and Dave Clark.
But it's very unusual. I mean, Ringo Starr had his drums in the back, and most drummers.
Yeah. But those are the kind of things that I've loved. Dave has obviously added a lot to the music conversation. He knows a lot, plus about history. And really, the features have been fun because I've gotten to kind of, assist Dave in helping to, you know, listen to some of the audio that he puts together. And that's been a lot of fun to listen to all those features, whether it be, you know, the Toll House, you know, in Whitman, to, again, talking about the prominent places in history and the lighthouses and the Simpson Spring and with the granite and Quincy. And, you know, it's been great. And that's really been a nice... I think those have been really wonderful, David.
Great compliment to the morning show.
Yeah, in addition to, you know, doing the newscast, it's kind of given you more of a creative outlet.
And
who am I going to go to for the box office on Monday morning? Who?
Actually, we're going to break my replacement, Dan McCready, and we're going to let Dan get settled for the first few weeks. Basically, my understanding is Dan is going to be doing afternoons just to kind of get into the groove, and then probably in January he will be doing mornings, and I told him that, yes, part of your responsibility is to do on Monday, you have to do the box office results, count all those ticket stubs, and come
so
up with
it. So it will live on?
So it will live on.
So that newsroom's going to be, I mean, because you clean right up after you count all the ticket stubs.
I do.
Is he going to be efficient
enough
like you?
I hope he's nice and neat.
Okay.
Yeah. I hope so as well.
That'll remain to be seen.
Now, I want to bring in, Ryan, who has been sitting here quietly, being part of the show. I mean, you have transcended not only some of the folks who have been here for 30 years, but younger folks like myself and Ryan. Ryan, what's it been
Everybody's younger than me. Are you kidding?
A little bit.
Except for Ed.
Ryan, what's it been like working with Dave?
Dave and I don't really work together that much, but Dave's definitely...
Shift's passing in the night?
Same thing with, you know, when I am in the newsroom, it's the afternoon shift, and, you know, well... inform each other on, you know, what's going on. Dave will tell me what he left me for the afternoon, which
and
is
I always leave
nice.
Him a lot.
Yes, you do. Thank you very much for that. No, it's been great. You know, I've just been in the newsroom for the past year part time, and working with Dave has been good. He's taught me a lot. I've listened to his newscast to see, you know, what, you know, the format, and working with Dave has been a pleasure the past year, and even before that, just getting to know him over the 5 years that I've been here.
Well, thank you.
And same here. I've learned a lot from you. My inception into the newsroom a decade ago, being able to go from being a town hall reporter for election results to, you know, learning how to be able to write scripts and do raps and voicers and get an idea of, you know, the grind of the morning and being able to be a dependable part of the morning team or whatever it may be.
Well, that's true. And that's another thing. Dave has really been great at working with almost everyone that has come into the newsroom, helping. I think Dave, have worked to try to make the reporters better reporters. You've helped to make the writers better writers and the anchors. You've given them tips, and you really will take the time, because I'll see sometimes I'll walk by and the phone and Dave will be on there trying to help out or emailing them tips, and you'll take the time in order to help, you know, and I think that says a lot about being a good team player.
Well, I think it's probably my teaching background. I mean, I was trained as a teacher, and I actually taught at Northeastern University evenings for a number of years, and so I do like, and I did some training when I worked in the computer industry. I trained people on computer systems, and I'm the guy that writes all the instructions on how to do stuff in the newsroom, because if it's not written down, it's kind of hard to communicate with people. And I just want to say that anybody who works at WATD in the newsroom, when they go anywhere else, it's always easier than working here, because nobody does news the way WATD does. It's something that I'm very proud of. I mean, we cover all the towns in the area. I mean, you know, Rob, we do storm coverage. Mm-hmm. I mean, people rely on us. You can't rely on a newspaper. You have to rely on us. And so when it's storm time, it's crunch time for us. We've got to get the information out, and we work with a lot of the emergency management folks in this area, and it's really worked out well. And I mean, I always feel that we're part of everybody's family. We're like part of their extended family.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what's, you know, they're, you know, letting us into their homes and cars, and we really appreciate that.
Rob, I want to thank you for sitting in on the segment. We got like 2 minutes left before we wrap up. Jerry Thornton, of course, on deck. He'll be in from Barstool Sports. Talk a little sports here. But I want to again wrap up our tribute to our good friend and colleague here, Dave Skill. Anything you want to say in closing? Tease folks about this coming Friday as to what you're going to do. How many bloopers do you have lined up right
well,
now?
Well, no. I mean, it's not going to be all that thing, really. There are some fun bloopers that we can laugh around and maybe, you know, have some fun. And I'll maybe give Dave a copy of that when he leaves as well. He can take that home and have some fun with it. But really, what we're going to do more Friday is kind of let Dave wrap up his last official newscast as far as his regular schedule. And that'll be the 9 o'clock news this Friday. Then we're going to let Dave have a chance to just kind of talk directly to the listeners who have welcomed Dave into their homes and cars for right. all these years. And then what we'll do is kind of take a look back. And like I said, I wish we had the archiver like we have now that I could pull up
yep.
everything. But I've got some stuff with Dave and Kathy D when Kathy D did the mornings. And we're going to have some stuff when Steve Mason hosted in the mornings.
Sure.
And some stuff more from the recent years as well, because Dave doing that has actually worked with a variety of people, David, through the times in the morning.
We have. I mean, I worked years ago with a guy named Joe McMillan, who down does our imaging. You hear Joe in a lot of our commercials.
That's right.
And you know, and then I worked with Kathy for a number of years. And Kathy and I used to have a great time together, because she would always pick on me, because we would talk about my, you know, experiences with gym class and shop class in high school and how inept I was. And needless to say, she loved doing that.
Well, Dave, I've loved working with you.
Thank
and,
you.
And I thank you for all the knowledge that you have shared with me. And hopefully I can share it with the next young, bright-eyed news reporter who comes in here and be part of the newsroom, hopefully for the next 10 to 20 years, and keep up your name. And, of course, you're not going anywhere from...
I'm not going away.
From what I understand is Friday really isn't really your last
no,
day. It's just your last day being, you know, a full-time news anchor here. You're going to go on to rocking and rolling. And
well, as a matter of fact, the day after the retirement party, I'll be back here doing an oldie
of
show.
Of course, yeah. That's, I love that.
That's a retirement... It's the shortest retirement in history.
Dave, we're going to miss you.
How can you miss me if I won't go away?
Well, we thank you for coming in and doing this segment here on Monday Night Talk.
Can I go to bed now? It's getting late.
Because you actually have to get up in the morning.
Yes.
So we thank you for coming in, and Rob also, and Ryan for being a part of it. And,
thanks,
and
Kevin.
Also the other folks who also shared, Christine, Bob, and Jackie, who shared their thoughts and sentiments. And Dave, this isn't goodbye. It's just we'll see you tomorrow.
All right.
All right. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, Jerry Thornton right here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, welcome back to the final segment of this Christmas special, the Monday Night Talk Christmas special. I want to thank Dave, who, again, as I said, he's transitioning from the news department to playing music. He'll do features. Those of you who love some of the features that he's put together over the years, fear not. There will be more. And I also want to thank Rob Hacklin, Ryan Stanton, who also sat in for that. Now, this is the fun part of the show. Not that talking to Dave wasn't fun, Chris, but this is fun because my good friend, the author of From Darkness to Dynasty, the book that you cannot find on the shelves because it's being printed as we speak.
Yes.
It's being printed as we speak. It's in its third printing.
Yes.
Congratulations. The author, none other than Jerry Thornton. Also, you can catch him and some of the stuff that he does nowadays on Barstool Sports.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Listen, it's thank you for the plug on the book. I want to thank everybody who has asked me, where can I get it? And I've been telling them for months, you can get it here, you can get it online, you can get it at these bookstores. And then crunch time comes, and everyone's out of them. It became the Tickle Me Elmo of 2016.
Which
on the one, yeah, the Hatchimo. On the one hand, I'm thrilled to have it be selling instead of collecting dust in a warehouse somewhere. But at the same time, you're going, wouldn't it be nice to have it be for sale? But that's a publisher's thing, and they said they're as frustrated as me that they didn't have enough printings in the second printing. But like I said, not a bad problem to have. It'll be available within days, I'm sure. Thank you to everybody who made a success, and people have reached out to me and said, you know, I got one for Christmas, I can't wait to start it, or I gave it to my dad, he read it in one day, and so on. So I'm a first-time author. I like to think that Stephen King is going to like drop his gun and quietly come out of the house because he knows he's been beat and there's no escape. But thank you for that. Thanks for the plug and for having me on your Christmas special.
The Christmas special. Well,
again, I feel like we should be sitting like on stools singing carols in front of like a fake backdrop of snow, like singing Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Yeah, but see, this would be better, the Penn and Teller. We would be the Penn and Teller, and I would be the, of course, the silent part of this act, because nobody wants to hear me sing. See,
we bring you on
because you are a man with so much knowledge. You are the man who defends the wall of Patriot Nation.
And still. Our watch has not ended. And by the way, pardon me in advance for the voice. I fell into tickets for the game. I went on Christmas Eve.
I saw that with the lighter.
Left.
That was awesome.
did you get it? So I imagine a couple people didn't get it. I
got it.
Pouring rain.
Oh, my God.
Lousy, terrible rain. So I lit
place
the lighter.
Place was filled, though, right?
Come on out to the Patriots game. We'll get together, have a few laughs. And if people don't get that Die Hard reference, then your life is sad and empty, and I have nothing but pity for you.
How?
But it kind of kicked my butt, like, voice-wise, and, you know, it was still a great day.
I was going to say, how satisfying. I know it's the bumbling Jets, the Jets that are fighting amongst themselves. It seems like the thing these days that after the Patriots put a thumping on a team, that there's a full-on brawl breaking out in the locker room next door.
Yeah, they're not just beating teams now. They're breaking their will. They're just completely demoralizing them, leaving them bereft of hope. They're coming out of these games going, our existence is a lie. God is a superstition. The Patriots are like so far above us. And by the way, I don't care how bad a team is. No team in the NFL is designed to be bad enough to be behind in a game 41-0. And if you are, you should never be bad enough to, at that point, settle for a field goal.
I know. Why would you do that?
Because you have zero pride, yes. And yeah, Sheldon Richardson now, who is like a superstar in this team, throwing shade at Brandon Marshall, another superstar, a week after the Patriots basically created a civil war in the Broncos locker room. Kevin, I got everything I could have possibly wanted this Christmas. Like, not just a big win over the despised and lowly and pathetic Jets, but Denver getting bounced out of the playoffs, the Ravens, patient zero of the whole Deflategate nonsense knocked out of the playoffs. And I don't root for injuries. I just think it's terrible karma. And I don't want karma to run over my dogma, so I don't ever do it. But injuries do happen.
Very nice. Very nice.
And sometimes they happen to a really good quarterback whom I have a lot of respect for,
yeah.
And that's Derek Carr. I hate the Raiders going back to my childhood, but at this point, hating the Raiders has felt kind of like that.
The Raiders.
Yeah, like why? Like why? Like it's kind of like when you try to explain to kids how Cuba used to be evil. Like why? I don't know. I don't know, but at some point they were evil and they had power and people were scared of them. Really? The Raiders are like that? Well, yeah, but you got to go back 15 years. That has got to crush that team. They are nipping at the Patriots' heels for a home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
Matt McGloin is the guy that you have to hope.
Matt McGloin?
Matt McGloin is the guy who hasn't started since 2013.
It sounds like one of those names like, you know, you would write down on the attendance sheet to see if your teacher would say, like,
paying attention. Right,
Pat McGroin.
No. No, it's a real name.
Dick
Hurst. He's on the roster. He's the guy who had to go in for a handful of snaps at the end of that game.
Glad everything is just coming up Patriots, though, isn't it?
Well, what do you do this weekend? What do you do
you
in
try
regards
to win. Yeah, you
have to win.
You don't take your foot off the gas. First of all, and Belichick made some remarks to this point, I think, today, where he said, you know, the math just isn't there for this idea of resting people and then getting them ready for the playoffs. Now they have done it at times before.
Yeah.
They play Brady for a half or maybe sit Gronk down altogether. You know, you got the bye week. They clinched that a week ago. The only goal left is home field, and it matters.
Sure.
It would be nice if the Raiders didn't have some chance to catch the Patriots. And you wonder why I'm still defending the wall, Kevin? The reason they have a chance to is because the tiebreaker will be common opponents, which includes that game against
Buffalo,
the Bills, which
we
the Patriots lost
right.
Because they had Jacoby Brissett, a third-string rookie who was hours away from thumb surgery.
Yeah, he barely had a thumb
right
on his throwing hand.
And not because they did not have Tom Brady because of that grave injustice. I don't have to use the D word. You know where I'm going with that.
Yep.
So it matters. It matters a ton. Unfortunately, because it shouldn't. Because Brady would have put up 20 on that Bills team in his sleep. But Jacoby Brissett, God bless him, kid works hard. He was not healthy that day. He gutted it out, but they scored 0 points. So,
and he's back in the roster.
Thank you, Goodell.
He's off IR, and they're grooming him. What's your thoughts on that? That they're grooming him, that we, you know, he's going to be a possible replacement if we need him in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, not...
You hope that doesn't come down to that.
Right, I'm not thinking about that so much as, is he a viable candidate to be your backup for next year? I say yes. Based on what I've seen of him, his maturity level, his ability to sort of read defenses, it's all... I mean, you know, he's still in first grade, but I look at this guy and say, you know, potential future honor roll. As opposed to what I thought of him, which is my first assumption was he's not going to be able to grasp stuff right away. He's going to look lost, having to be thrown into his second professional game. Yep. he looked good. And let us not forget what he did to the Texans in week two. Like, he showed a skill set there. I'm fine with a future that includes Jacoby Brissett.
You look at it, you were speaking with the great Jerry Thornton, author, man who writes for BarstoolSports.com, soon to have a podcast. You know, that's in the works, right?
You're going
to have
a regular daily podcast,
or is that going to be how will that work?
A weekly thing.
Weekly thing.
And Barstool recently signed on with Sirius XM to do a 2 hours a day from noon to two every day. I imagine I'll have some involvement in that.
Jerry be a part of that. Yeah.
Yeah, when we're thinking. And tomorrow, by the way, if anyone's interested, should be listening to WATD, but if you get some time
between
10 and 2, I'll be back on WEEI filling in. Still part of the family and the equation over there, which makes me feel pretty good because I don't want to leave.
I do miss you.
The siren song of going back to Barstool was too tempting, but EEI, bless him, said we had it. You know, you're still part of the mix here, so that's nice.
Everything falls into place this coming weekend. The Patriots are able to dispatch the Dolphins down in Miami. Oakland falls to Denver because we need Denver to step up and not go out like a bunch of bums like they are.
Yeah.
When you look forward, okay, you got the week off. Who is the quintessential set of opponents that you're okay with seeing the Patriots face? And what is the team or teams that you would preferably not want the Patriots to face to make it that much easier for them to go down to Houston and go for yet another Super Bowl ring?
Kevin, does it sound too homerish if I say there's really nobody there that I objectively fear? Like, okay, Denver, positively, if the Patriots would have to go out there, or even if they came here, definitely if you went out there, because Denver itself, that stadium is a haunted house. It is a haunted amusement park from Scooby-Doo. You know, like, oh my God, they're being chased by the ghoul, and then there's Shaggy being chased. Now Shaggy's chasing the ghost. Weird things always happen out there.
Those meddling kids.
Exactly. Baltimore, even in their mediocre years, would slip into the playoffs, and then weirdly something would click in, and they would play better in January than they had all season, including when the Pats beat them in 2014. They had to come back from 2 14-point deficits by pulling out every trick they had in the book. So those are two teams I definitely would fear in January.
Okay.
I feel like Pittsburgh is the anti-Baltimore, and that they can play great all year long, but as a Patriots fan, I don't have that institutional fear of them. When they have been 15-1, the Pats have gone down there and beat them. You know, when they've had home field advantage, they beat them. So I don't feel that way. And now, you know, Kansas City is kind of the new hotness. Oh, you know, if the Patriots play them, you know, they've gotten much better. Who has gotten better by a greater amount? The 2015 Chiefs to the 2016 Chiefs, or 2015 Patriots to the current Patriots? I feel like the Patriots have taken a greater leap than they did when they shellacked Kansas City in the playoffs last year. So I'm not feeling that fear either.
I was at that game. It was fantastic.
Wasn't great. Like, it wasn't even, it was barely competitive.
And
right?
what is great is this, and you've seen this because you've been to your share of games. You know, when you have those people who are the fans of that other team, and they're like, oh, ho, ho, ho. And then when the score is like it's lopsided and the team's down, they're very quiet and like, hey, do you see the scoreboard? You know, you get that one jerk who like teased the demoralized fans who showed up and drove all the way from Worcester to come to the game and realize that their team just
you know what bad. I haven't seen that Christmas Eve day at Gillette. You couldn't find a Jets fan. It was unbelievable. There's always like what 5%, 10% maybe, and you know, maybe more so for the Jets because they're, you know, division rival. There wasn't a soul. Like, you couldn't, bomb sniffing dogs couldn't find Jets. It was unbelievable. Like, maybe they just went to the Pats Pro Shop and bought some gear just to hide their shame. But yeah, I refuse to say there's no team I respect. It's not about respect. There's not a team I fear. You know, you always give any team that sort of one, you know, that hope. And I, you know, watch the Patriots beat the Jets 45-3, and a few weeks later lose to them at home in a playoff game.
Oh, my God.
So
I remember that.
Right, and I will always stick with that, but I don't see a scenario where one of the aforementioned playoff teams beats the Patriots, especially if they get home field. I just don't see it.
Yeah. I don't see it either, but, you know, you have to be prepared for that, you know, destroying a team, and then they come back, and even though they're not going to make it to the big game in February, still beating you and going on to be, you know, in the AFC, you know, East Conference game.
Yeah, but I mean,
you're like, they don't belong in there. We belong in there.
I mean, all right, if Miami gets in there, I don't know whether, you know, Ryan Tannehill has always been the dictionary definition of the average NFL quarterback, and the numbers bear that out. He's always right in the middle of the pack across the board statistically. Well, now he's even out, you know. So am I worried about, who is it, Matt Moore. You know, and there was a time earlier in the season when I said the Patriots defense is incapable of making an opposing quarterback look bad, yeah, no matter who it is. Obviously, that has changed because they're able to do that now. They're playing a different style. They're more aggressive. Their secondary is much better, to the point where the passer rating by the Jets quarterbacks was a combined 0.4.
Yeah.
As somebody pointed out, if every time they snapped, they took a snap, they dropped back and just spiked the ball into the ground, they would have had a higher passer rating than they actually had.
And that's funny you mentioned about the Patriots' defense. It seems as though, you know, this has been an interesting year where you traded away one of your top pass rushers, you know, prior during the offseason.
Sure.
And you came in less one. You had one that got one of your pass rushers got suspended for four games, Rob Ninkovich. You took turns punishing half of your team because they were monkeying around, or, you know,
yeah, you know what I mean? Alan Branch,
and you just Malcolm Brown just had
Jabal Sheard stayed home,
yep, and was at the Celtics game. Yeah, and yeah, but you have guys who are still thriving. Your secondary is starting to come together.
You traded Jamie Collins for some pizza coupons, you know, and I think they're expired. Yeah, I think, and the Collins trade speaks to this the most, because really all they got for him that they wouldn't have gotten if they just let him walk into free agency at the end of the season was the picks that they got will be this year instead of the following year.
Right.
It's kind of a very small upgrade to let a freakishly athletic guy like him walk away. Having said it, the only reason they make that move is because they feel, for whatever reason, it will make our team better. And I think, Kevin, reading the tea leaves here, I think what it says is that Collins wasn't doing the things that they wanted him to do. He wasn't where they wanted him to be. And they would rather go with guys who are where they want them to be, when they want them to be there. Well, look at the results. I mean, look at the guys that they're playing at a high level with. Landon Roberts, Kyle Van Noy, Shea McClellan. Yeah, there was a play yesterday where they forced an incompletion on a third down where Rob Ninkovich was at middle linebacker. And I think they just...
They had no Dante Hightower.
Yeah, they had no Hightower.
They sat him because he's got a sore knee.
Yep. And so I think it speaks to them saying, we're going to send a message to the defense, straighten up and fly right. We want guys who are going to be coached. And it has been a victory for the system over, we need this guy. This guy is so athletic, we can't live without him. Granted, the Jets are, no one's going to confuse them with the 1999, you know, St. Louis Rams. But the Patriots demolished them with these guys that we just mentioned, and with Eric Rowe at cornerback or whatever. They let Darrell Revis walk and replace them with Malcolm Butler, who is playing at a high level, and
who got snubbed for the Pro Bowl.
For the Pro Bowl, yeah.
Snubbed.
Yeah, and that's a, I'm fine. Yeah, I kind of like the Pro Bowl snub thing. I think it
wasn't going to go anyways.
But yeah, I think it just sort of says, it's almost like a badge of honor now. LeGarrette Blount doesn't make it. Good. Okay, Blount, right. There you go. There's your
But there's a guy who's so far 17 touchdowns. You know,
team,
be able to
team
just,
record and team counting, record.
Yeah.
And a guy
at Rob Gronkowski, who
at the age of 30, an age for running backs, not for the rest of us, not for, you know, older gentlemen like myself and even young guys like you. When you're 30 as an NFL running back, it really is time to take Old Yeller out back behind the barn. And he's having, in a lot of ways, a career year. Yeah. And so it's been an astonishing coaching job. It really has. And to see what they're able to do without, you know, you mentioned Gronkowski. To look at the offensive line, my God. Remember last year at the Denver game? What were we all saying?
Googly, oh, my God. I mean, but who knew that the offseason acquisition, probably the best acquisition, was bringing back Dante Scarnecchia?
Right, yeah. I wrote this blog on Barstool, and I said he's the Patriots man of the year. And maybe I'm just sort of, I don't know, have an affinity for older respected gentlemen who help build an institution, then walk away in 2014, and then go back to it in 2016 to a triumph and fanfare.
You should be coach of the year.
Yeah. I don't know why that whole story speaks to me. Oh, wait, I did exactly that at Barstool. And Scarnecchia and I are both, as you know, pretty macho, tough, manly, respected men. I don't know how he does it. Like, what is his key? How does he take that line that was a Jerry Bruckheimer disaster movie last year and couldn't stop anyone? Brady was getting pressured 49% of his dropbacks. He got hit 38% of his dropbacks. And Saturday's game, I'm not sure Brady threw his uniform in the hamper. He just sort of spritzed a little Febreze on and just hung it right back up because they kept him upright against Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson and David Harris, like very talented guys on that front.
Let's go back to the week prior against Denver.
Von Miller, yeah.
You talk about Von Miller, who is lethal, and he's good for at least not one but two sacks on the New England Patriots.
He's right. Easily one of the top five players in the NFL.
Right.
And Marcus Cannon, and to a lesser extent Nate Solder, because they moved him back and forth a little bit, threw an invisibility cloak over him. It was like he wasn't at the game. They did the same thing to Aaron Donald. Yeah. I mean, now I'm talking the interior of the line, the guards and the center, on Aaron Donald from the Rams, one of the best players. And go back earlier in the year, J.J. Watt. This has been going on with this line that was so maligned. And I was no Marcus Cannon fan at the end of last year. I couldn't believe
they were
bringing him back. Yeah.
Who was? And now he just got an extension?
I mean, you know what? I don't know who wrote this, but like the day that he got the extension, someone was saying he is their number one priority in free agency. And then they signed him that. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Yeah, it was me.
It was you.
Oh, it was me. I'm so sorry. Oh, did that seem like a humble brag? Well, take the humble out of it. I'm bragging because my eyes tell me this guy is an elite right tackle. Yeah. And across the line, they're playing the same five guys all game, every snap.
Right. It isn't like 194 combinations.
Right, as it was last year where they were just, by the end of the year.
It's 300 pounds, get in there.
It was like the Confederate Army, like late in 1864, where they're just putting old men and like teenage boys in uniforms that hang off of them. It looked like, you know, something that wasn't going to be able to rectify itself. And they bring in Scarnecchia, and whatever sort of respect he engenders, magic he was able to accomplish,
respect.
That is an offensive line you feel great about. So, you know, you can look at the Cowboys and say that's a great offensive line, which it is, but having them be your problem is a good problem to have because it means you're in the Super Bowl.
That's an excellent segue, my friend. We just got a couple more minutes left here, but I got to get to two quintessential questions, and that is Patriots, you know, if they are, you know, the AFC conference champions and they go on representing the AFC, who do you think they see? Do they see Dallas? Is Dallas that juggernaut? Do they get knocked? Does Dallas get knocked off by a vaunted Seattle defense, or do those sneaky Giants somehow be a part of the equation? And there's a part three to this. There's a trilogy.
The Giants thing. It's just I'm just hardwired now to be terrified of that, even though They would be probably the weakest team. It wouldn't be the first weakest time. It wouldn't be the first year that they went in as one of the weakest NFC teams.
Jerry, you winced when I said the Giants. I saw you.
I'm a damaged person. This is what they did to me.
But you realize that there's an individual no longer walking those sidelines who could have caused the damage.
Yeah. Listen, 2014, Kevin, I was afraid the Giants were going to get into the playoffs somehow. They were 6-10.
Yeah.
I said, you know, maybe they'll just be like a loophole that they'll exploit, or some team will just quit. Although a friend of mine, my buddy Jake, had a great point the other day. We're talking about this. He goes, what made 2004 with the Red Sox so special is that they beat the team that had tormented them. Yeah. And, you know, there's something to be said for that. But, yeah, the Giants, I still fear the uniform thing. I'd say the best out of those teams is Seattle. You know, I like Wilson. I think if I could not have Tom Brady as my quarterback, I would happily live in a world where it was Russell Wilson.
He's a great game manager.
Yep. And their defense, and, yeah, he threw five picks a while ago, and their defense has had its moments where they were weak. But I think that is the most talented, experienced team. I fear them more than I fear a team with a rookie running back and a rookie quarterback, as well as those guys have played. So give me another Patriots-Seattle Super Bowl, and we'll see how much torment the gods will put us through again.
Right. Final question. We've just got a couple of moments left here. And I have to ask you, the man who has been labeled the GOAT, and not because he is bad for the team, but because he is the greatest of all time, Tom Brady, who had to pay the penalty of Deflategate, and it's part of debate whether or not, because he did not play the first four games, should he be in the conversation for MVP? He is having an MVP caliber season so
25
far.
25 touchdowns, two interceptions.
Two picks, and two of those, I think he challenged himself just by tossing those ones up.
And you know what? No, it's ridiculous to have anybody suggest that would be a disqualifier. I mean, you know, Joe Montana missed three games once, so and won an MVP. Is that, and that was for injury, granted, but is that the line where we're drawing it? If you are better through 12 games than other people are through 16, that's your, having said it, don't care. Listen, if Brady's won two MVPs and they didn't win the Super Bowl either time, I kind of like that vibe of, oh, only won two MVPs, but five, six, seven Super Bowls, that's, wear that like a badge of honor, my friend.
Jerry, I want to thank you for joining us and talking a little pro football and talking a little bit about yourself.
Thank you.
Talking about the holidays.
And George Michael, did we talk about George Michael? Rest in peace.
No, he's never going to.
Talk about last Christmas.
He's never going to dance again.
He'll still be my father figure, though.
He certainly will.
But, hey, thanks a lot, 2016. Kevin, thanks for having me on again. I've enjoyed being with you yet another year, my friend.
You got it. Until, hey, next year at 6:15 p.m. next week, we'll be back with another show. Have yourself a great evening and a happy new year.